Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This is G.R. Mobley. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. If you go to MobiusStripPress.com, you can find out how you can download these podcasts and find our support documents and links. As a reminder, this is an educational and grassroots program designed to restoring our constitutional republic. Many parts of this show will refer to previous shows, and all of these shows are kind of dovetailed with each other. That said, you need to listen to all of these shows so that you can garner what Republic Review is and how we can reclaim the Republic. I've mentioned previously that I have an executive summary on Facebook on the Mobius Strip Press page of Facebook. That's Mobius Strip Press. I know that's a mouthful, and saying all of these difficult vocabulary words that the framers used back in their time is always tongue-twisting, and so it's always difficult to try to say these things right. But anyway, Mobius Strip Press page on Facebook is where you'll find my executive summary. I believe it's also paramount at this point in time to kind of address this ground movement or this stupid idea that's growing legs regarding the constitutional challenge that's playing out from this past election. And many people are or have been challenging the wisdom in the Electoral College. First, we have to look at the big picture that we are a republic and a republican form of government, not a democracy. And the wisdom of the framers in inserting the Electoral College and inserting a guaranteed Republican form government within the Constitution was incredibly wise. What this does, and as a matter of fact, Delaware clearly stated at the very beginning of the Constitutional Convention the reason that they didn't want an apportionment to population, because they were a small state. And they came right out and said, "We don't trust you bigger states. We think that you're just going to gobble us up and just deny us of our own self-interests." Anyway, what does this mean, and who said what are and what is a republican form of government? As I just said, it's the Constitution. The Constitution dictates and guarantees that the states would be republican in form. It states in Article 4, Section 4, and I quote, "The United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government." Now, this itself can feed a very long series of shows, because this is one element of the Constitution that is not being abided by. Almost all the states in this union are abiding by democracy and democracy rules. In other words, 50 plus one is what drives change within a state. And what that does is it nullifies and cancels the disparate parts of a state, such as Eastern Washington from Western Washington, and it allows Eastern Washington, or actually Western Washington, to basically do runsack and run over all the rest of the other counties and congressional districts, instead of recognizing that we have our own voice in republican form of government. That means it's representative. The framers knew the dangers of democracies, and they knew the ebb and flow and the tossing to and fro of democracies, that there were two extreme ends of a democracy. There was anarchy on one end, and on the other end there was democracy, or not democracy, despotism, another D word. So from anarchy to despotism, they saw nations and societies really get tossed to and fro from these upheavals. The most stable government was a distributive sovereignty and a republican. And as a matter of fact, during the Continental Congress, during the Declaration of Independence, and right at that point in time, John Adams wrote a very long dissertation called A Republic. And that was basically establishing what I think was a common conception, but he documented why we wanted to have a republic instead of a democracy. again, this distributive sovereignty is something I spoke of before when I contrasted centrifugal to centripetal political energies. Remember, the centrifugal is outward flowing and centripetal political energies are inward flowing. And if you look at a republic, and or you look at representative government, or if you just kind of put it into concept of marriage and how a husband and wife are driving a car, well, they both can't be driving the car. Somebody has to, actually put their hands on the wheel and control the pedals. You can't share that responsibility and safely drive that vehicle. So you have to basically delegate to one person the responsibility of operating the car and another person the responsibility of navigating. And, we got to stop. We need to get this. We need a bathroom break for the kids. If you look at a government in democracies, you basically are letting everybody drive that car. And so we'll hit the brakes. And actually, one of the things that the framers recognized in democracies or in monarchies and so forth, they're either one extreme or the other. And so one of the things that tended to happen, and as a matter of fact, a classic example of that was the French Revolution, was as soon as there was no food to eat, the people, made that the number one priority. And yeah, you've got to eat, but they become very reactionary. And so you start chasing the problem of the day with democracies, where with a Republican form of government, it's hard to change and it takes a lot of effort to change. And they knew this, and they knew that it would make it impossible or very hard to upset the general government and the course that they were supposed to take in outward facing in their limited and defined government. It's a little bit more complicated than that, than just driving a car or two people. The government has lots of different facing directions and or focuses. So if you looked at the complexity of driving a large battleship and all of the things that make that thing float, the commander of the ship may have the ultimate say, but he delegates power down to the engine room, to the electronics and so forth, so that these other subcomponents to this ship can make independent decisions to meet the overall needs of where they need to go and how they need to get their refueling and those types of things. Because you're not literally driving every facet of that ship from one control post or one control system. There are many facets of that. So these two metaphors, I think, kind of help give you an idea of what our Republican form of government is, that there were distributive and representative in form. The ship driving requires trust and leadership. This is the same with the car, and that's the same with government. A tenet in leadership is similar to our constitutional framework, and that is delegating authority. In creating this general government, these states and these independent sovereign nations, these 13 states and now 50 states, have to put trust in each other and have to put trust in the general government that it's going to comply to its constitution. Ultimately, in government, their job is to fulfill their oath of office. And this means that they are supposed to protect and defend the constitution, not discard it for political expediency, to pay off their constituents or their lobbyists. So their focus should be doing their job and fulfilling their oath and staying within the confines of the Constitution. And again, we constantly see that these guys are discarding what they should be doing for political expediency, or they're trying to pay off, like I said, constituents or lobbyists. Consequently, in a Republican form of government, it is a representative form where we delegate and empower our representatives to do our will. In the state, we have representatives that basically represent us in the state legislature as well as in the state senate. these are the people that we've given the ability to create laws. We're not the ones that are supposed to do that. It's not the only democracy that's involved is the selecting of our representatives. The same principle applies to Electoral College. These Electoral College votes originally, which actually is established in Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution, where they vote for two candidates, and that was back at the very beginning. This resulted in a long political fight in 1800 when Jefferson and Adams were running, and it actually drove towards a change to the Constitution, which gave us the 12th Amendment. But the Electoral College, these guys nowadays are supposed to represent us. These electors, and the way they break it down by state, is they're allocated to the state by representatives in Congress. In other words, we have representatives within the House, and then we have two representatives for the state in the Senate. So in the state of Washington, because we have 10 congressional districts, we get 10 electors for the congressional districts, and we get two electors for the Senate. So that's why we have 12 Electoral College seats. I'm coming up on the hard break. I hear the music. So let me take a quick break, and I will pick it up from the representatives in Congress when we get back. Thank you. Okay, so where I left off was the allocation of the Electoral College. And just so everybody understands why I'm down this rat hole and why I'm not really citing other founding documents right now is because there's a move afoot in trying to abolish the Electoral College and try to move us towards that dangerous form of government that the framers saw. I will tell you that Barbara Boxer of California, the Senator of California, is constitutionally illiterate. And as a matter of fact, progressives, and if you look at communist nations, because they're very despotic nations and socialistic nations, the same, they want a democracy because they are trying to set us to a point where they can hand out enough entitlements and hand out enough benefits to where, you know, we will vote for more and more of those. But here's the secret. What they're handing out is unconstitutional, and they're stealing that from you and I and from businesses to buy these people's votes. It's not only immoral and unethical, it's unconstitutional, as I've said. So back to the Electoral College, just so people understand that we are allocated as a state 12 electoral votes. And again, 10 of those are for the congressional districts. And if you have a smaller state like Wyoming, even though Wyoming is a large piece of land, it only has one congressional district and two senators. So they only have three. The same thing with Alaska. They only have three Electoral College votes. Anyway, like I said, that the second modification of this process was the 12th Amendment, where the electors would only choose one candidate. So that's how they changed, instead of choosing two candidates, which created a huge tie back in the 1800s. And I think it forced them 36 times in casting votes before they finally came to a compromising conclusion that Jefferson was going to be president. It was mayhem in 1800, folks. It's not mayhem now. Even though we have these orchestrated protests, it's not mayhem now. And these protests will just, it's just like the Occupy Wall Street. They're a bunch of paid folks that are doing nothing else with their lives. And so they're just being paid to go out and create folly and create mayhem as much as they possibly can. But anyway, the second round of changes for the Electoral College, which came out of the 12th Amendment, each Electoral College elector could vote for one president and one vice president. And so these electors were originally assigned by the state legislatures, and these electors were free to vote their conscience in the original two forms. In other words, they weren't tied to a party. These electors were people that were selected by the state legislatures that were supposedly very well apprised with what was going on. It was a position of nobility. They didn't get paid anything, but these were the people that actually chose the new president and vice president. And so without reading the portions of the Constitution of how this laid out, both in Section 1 of Article 2 and the 12th Amendment, what's really happened today is that there's been an alteration or a modification to where in the late 1800s, the political class kind of altered this process by using statutes. And I think this is interesting because in the very beginning, when they made a change to the Electoral College, they actually did it via an amendment. What happened? Why is it that all of a sudden they can make these willy-nilly changes through statute and regulations in playing with how we select a president? It was important enough to put it into the contract that our Electoral College was defined within the Constitution and required an amendment to change that process. All of a sudden, we don't have to do that anymore. I'm just telling you that the way we've gotten to this position of our Electoral College defies my logic as far as how they were able to get away with creating regulations and statutes, other than the fact that they've been getting away with violating the constitutional process, which is the Article 5 process of amending the Constitution to then get everybody to buy into it. Because the 12th Amendment required 3/4 of the state to agree that that's how they're going to choose the president. And now the political class have altered this process again by using statute and regulations. What they have created actually conflicts with the Constitution and the end outcome, because we've no longer falling under republicanism. If you look at all of the different states, and we will really quick, the Electoral College has really changed. So how does the Electoral College work today? Well, all states, except for Maine and Nebraska, have chosen electors on a winner-takes-all basis. In other words, if the candidate X gets 50% of the vote plus one extra vote, then they take all the electors. In Maine and Nebraska, they break it down by their electoral or congressional district method by selecting one elector within each congressional district by popular vote and awarding two electors by the statewide by their popular vote. So in other words, they're doing it right in Maine and in Nebraska. What should happen is each congressional district, however we voted in a particular, let's say you're in Congressional District 1 or in Congressional District 7 or 10, if you look at how the popular vote went in that congressional district, that elector should be tied to represent, in the Republican form of government, should represent the will of those people, and they should be casting their vote towards candidate X that won that congressional district, and they should be tied to that. But what we have today is the electors in all the other states except for Maine and Alaska are tied to the party. And as a matter of fact, if you didn't know, in the Democratic Party in the state of Washington, one of the electors of the Electoral College came out and said, "I don't want to vote for Hillary," when all of these emails and all of this corruption started coming out. This guy says, "Hey, I've got this moral conscience. I'm not going to vote for a crook like that." And so he actually, you know, could, but he was tied and was expected to vote for Hillary. And he was asking and looking for how he could change his vote. And so the state legislatures and these regulations that the federal government has put up in these statutes, these are all what I would consider constitutional violations of our fundamental principle of that Republican form of government. Although no elector is required by federal law to honor their pledge, there have been very few occasions when an elector has voted contrary to a pledge. It is expected that those who have been pledged are to vote the way they're supposed to vote. And I believe by party loyalists and so forth, it's almost a political death if you go contrary like that, the guy here, if Hillary would have won and he would have been able to vote, actually, he should be voting. But the question is, will that state, Washington State Electoral College vote that because winner took all, Hillary took the state, is that guy going to be able to change his vote and vote for candidate X? And, you know, that's the question of whether those votes are cast that way. But the 12th Amendment requires that each elector to cast one vote and one vote for the president only literally a counted and tallied vote where it was a vote of conscience. And since we've moved away from that, we've moved towards a political class system. Again, this has all made pretty good sense as far as the party bosses. And if you're familiar with the early 1900s and how party bosses ran stuff, they were the ones that would be dictating, and they would be trying to play at a local level their own way of getting people from their region. I mean, Coolidge was a president that was basically playing with the party bosses when he was running against Hardee and ended up becoming the vice president instead. But the party bosses is not a Republican form of government. It's almost like a little monarchy or a little dictatorship where these parties basically get to control who's going to be representing the people and who gets in. What should happen is that the electors should be representative in form, like I said, and the each congressional district, and we need to change this, and we need to get back towards the Republicanism and go back towards the 12th Amendment and then free that up from the state legislatures being able to appoint who is going to be the Electoral College and allow each congressional district to dictate who their Electoral College will, you know, who will vote for that congressional district. In other words, tie it towards the popular vote of the congressional district so that the people of a given region in a congressional district has their representation. So no longer does it get shadowed by a large metropolis that can muster up just over 50% of the vote and silence the rest of the state and their representation and their voice. If one understands what has happened, most of the people in the heartland and the majority of the republic have lost their voice. And what we need to do is to get back to that. If one looks back at the 2012 election with Romney would have won that overwhelmingly because the majority of the congressional seats were won by Republicans. I have written an article about this regarding the progressives and how they use voter fraud and how they're stealing these electoral votes in battleground states. And it's worth reading to understand the 2012 dynamics. There were 5 million more votes cast for president than there were for Congress. Where did those 5 million people come from? And if you look, over half of those were in battleground states. Suffice it to say that we need to get back towards a Republican form of government, and we need to have the Heartland's voice heard. I hear the music and I'm running out of time. So God bless. I hope everybody understands Republicanism a little bit better after this and fight to keep our Electoral College. Thank you very much, and we'll hear from you online, and we'll be online again and back next week.